You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clement Maniatella.
Live.
Online. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
DSTV channel 856.
92.7 and 106 FM.
It's 8 minutes after 9 o'clock. Dumelang, welcome to the show. It's Wednesday. I hope you're having a good morning and ready to walk the talk with us over the next 3 hours. Wednesday means you can look forward to our listener's choice and what's the tea features. Are you ready for that? I am. Let's start the show with the 702 open line between now and 10 o'clock. Be the first caller and set the agenda. Call me and tell me what's popping. What's on your mind? 011-883-0702. You can send me your WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702. The SMSs, you can send them to 31702.
You're with Clement Maniatella on 702.
Live.
Online.
Smartphones.
The 702 app.
DSTV channel 856.
92.7 and 106 FM.
So President Cyril Ramaphosa is expected to hold a high-level meeting of the President's Coordinating Council today ahead of a planned announcement on restrictions to curb the resurgence of COVID-19. That council includes ministers, their premiers, there's the leadership of the South African Local Government Association as well. And it follows the Coronavirus Command Council meeting yesterday. And some restrictions were considered in that meeting. Restrictions in hotspot areas. Look, what our government officials seem to agree about is that a lockdown will be disastrous for our economy, right? It will cause major job losses. Some economic sectors were only just beginning to recover. But something has to give. Something has to give. In some areas, the number of cases are higher than during the surge in July. So government has to balance protecting lives, curbing the surge, and protecting the economy. So what can it do? What do you think the compromise can be? I see the Soweto newspaper is even reporting that soldiers may be back on the streets. Should the focus be on enforcement, law enforcement? And what are you going to do to protect yourself? Are you traveling? Are you cancelling your plans, your Christmas lunch and maybe your New Year's parties? Are you cancelling that given where we are heading now in terms of cases? I want to hear from you. 011-883-0702. You can send me your WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702.
For compliance.
You know, this is actually funny. All they go on about is alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. Really? Is that all they can talk about? It's an easy scapegoat. It's an easy scapegoat. It's like going to the doctor. Don't ever tell a doctor you have a drink or that you have a cigarette, because it's the easiest thing to blame. They don't have to do too much effort. Why do you think no one's listening to this government anymore and their rules and regulations? We don't care anymore. Come, ANC, try and lock us down. Let's go. Let's see what happens. I want to see something. Let's do this.
Yo, yeah. You know, when you touch alcohol, you're touching people in their studios, hey? Yo. But I mean, there could be restrictions, right? There could be restrictions around trade and say, okay, let's now allow trade between Monday and Friday and not over the weekend anymore. That can make a little difference. It still has an impact on the business themselves and the shops and the trade. But look, like I say, something has to give, guys. We cannot continue as normal. The reality now is that the COVID-19 cases are increasing. We have to protect the economy, but government also has a responsibility to protect lives and make sure that they curb the surge. So what do they need to do? What are you willing to compromise? What are you willing to compromise? 011-883-0702. Let's start in Polokwane. Tabiso, good morning.
Good morning, Clement.
Hey, you want to talk about Dandile Lungisa?
Yeah, no, Clement, just a quick question, but if it's, Clement, where were you 6 years ago?
Tabiso, just move around. Just move around. I'm struggling to hear you. I'm struggling. Just move around, and then I'll come back to you just now. Maybe I take back that call, and let's make sure it's just a clearer line to Tabiso. Dingani, you are calling from Alberton. Hi.
Karen.
Yeah.
We sacrificed the economy. We sacrificed livelihood.
Oh, what is happening with the lines this morning? What is... Okay, Dingani, I'm going to ask you, because I'm also struggling to hear you. I think you're driving. But otherwise, I think your line was a little clear there. Let's go back to Tabiso and hear if the line is much better. Tabiso?
Hello, Clement.
Ah, much better. Yes, you were saying?
I was asking a question as to where were you 6 years ago?
Where was I 6 years ago?
Yes.
I don't remember, but I wasn't at Prime Media. I was working somewhere else. And yeah, I was working. I was new in the industry. That's all I remember.
You know that that was the last time the Youth League in Gauteng had its contract.
What is the Youth League, Tabiso? What's the ANC Youth League? What is that?
The ANC Youth League.
King Yonayo.
The last time they had its elective conference was 6 years ago.
Yeah, I forgot they even exist.
So we'll be counting next year. So I was surprised that they would have this audacity to release a statement and say they are duly representing young people. Well, that's the days of our lives. But that's not the issue that I wanted to talk about. Clement, yesterday, upon the release of Andy Milongisa, some of us had expected him, you know, just to go home, you know, see, well, his family members and so on and so forth. He made a lot of serious complaints. I mean, I listened to quite a number of his interviews across all radio stations, and even watched him some of his interviews on TV. He said, I mean, one simple question, how was your experience of you being in jail? You were speaking about issues of land, you know, all these other things and all of that. He didn't want further to speak about the President Zuma being mistreated and so on and so forth.
And the State Capture Commission,
Yes, the State Capture Commission and so on and so forth. I find that to be very much unfortunate, because those utterances in one way or the other do not help us with someone who, not only at the High Court, but also the Supreme Court of Appeal, you know, agreed with the sentence that has been given insofar as.
Yes, Tabiso?
I just hope that he'll sit down, he'll sit down with himself, have a meeting with himself, and think. And do not start speaking rational things, and think alone.
I think you've got high expectations of people, Tabiso. I think you've got high expectations of some people. You're expecting Andy Lelungisa to sit down and do what? I don't know, you know, I don't know. Should we still take Andy Lelungisa seriously? To be honest with you, I was reading the news last night and I was watching the package of how many journalists were packed in that room when he was addressing the media. And I felt, is he that relevant? I mean, I know that, a former councillor.
We also have a disadvantage of celebrity mediocrity sometimes and giving it unnecessary publicity. You know, we just have to leave him and him go home.
Yeah, we've lost that call to Tabiso. Yeah, look, I was a little surprised. I was like, is he still that relevant? I mean, to pack a whole room with journalists. But then I get it that, this is someone who was a councillor. He's very controversial. He's still part of the ANC. He's being used to fight factional battles, perhaps, some may argue, in the ANC, being used by another faction. So it's the similar thing with even to Duzani Zuma, where some people feel, why are you guys even talking to him? What role does he play in the body of politics? And some will argue, well, what role is he going to play in the body of politics in the future? And you want to be able to reference what he said previously and say, okay, I see where you are now. You know, you're probably running for president in the ANC, or you're leading this RET forces. And this is where the journey started, right? I was a bit surprised to see so many people in that room. Dingaan, you're calling from Alberton. Hi.
Clement.
Hey, right. Tada.
So, 10 months ago, you told us that we're going to sacrifice the economy. You told us to change the way that we live our lives. We put women in harm's way by asking them to be locked up with the perpetrators in their homes. We deployed the army, in some instances civilians were abused, and in one instance, someone was killed. We built two hospitals, we diverted money from other government programs. All of this, we're told, was to buy time, to flatten the curve, and to give government an opportunity to build up its health infrastructure.
Yeah.
10 months later, you cannot tell me that the same solution is still applicable. It means that we've done all of this for nothing. Surely, if our infrastructure was built and was supposed to be resistant post the second, just before the second wave, we shouldn't be having this conversation, right? Also, we were told that we're going to have a surge in infections because we're going into our winter months, right? Mm-hmm. We are now in spring / in the cusp of summer. Surely it cannot be that the pre-winter and winter solutions are still applicable even in summer. It means that we are running out of ideas. We are fresh out of ideas. That's what it means. The government cannot wash its hands of this and say it is because of behavior that detected this. They said they're building infrastructure, and if the infrastructure was in place, wouldn't we have a new situation where we are contemplating another lockdown, whatever iteration you're going to have, but you shouldn't be talking about a lockdown. At least not 10 months later. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and even the resurgence that we experienced in July, Dingani, wasn't as bad as what we were told, we could expect. Here's a question I have for you, Dingani. The reality here is, even if we've got hospitals that are fully capacitated to deal with, more hospitalizations, if we are seeing a surge, let's take the Eastern Cape, for instance, where the number of infections there are more than what we experienced in July. If you're seeing that, surely you need to put in place some form of restrictions without impacting the economy that much, but put in some sort of restriction so that people get to understand that, look, we are headed for a disaster here, and we need to start being in control of our movements to avoid us getting to a stage that's not going to be, a stage that's really going to be disastrous.
No, Clement, 10 months later, my brother, we can't have this conversation, honestly. But remember, the reason why lockdown was not meant to cure this thing, it was meant to flatten the curve, to use that phrase, okay?
Yeah.
Now, flatten the curve meant that you're buying time so you can build up infrastructure. 9, 10 months later, we can't be saying we're not ready, for another surge. I'm not saying people should be reckless and obviously get infected with this thing. But what I'm saying is that if we're having a solution B, right, to now the post-winter and, say, mid-spring infections, it's fine. I can understand that, okay? Mm. But surely, 10 months ago, we didn't know what we now know 10 months later, right? Now, also, remember this. Whenever we talk about a surge in infection, there is a statistical data that is used, right, to get to a number. We've never reached that, okay? Surely you can't, again, go over conservative with your estimations and ask the country to take another economic blow. You can't.
We can't. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. What about level two? What about level two, Dingan? Because where you've got restrictions on alcohol from Monday to Friday, you still allow people to travel, interprovincial travel, you allow safety protocols to be observed, but there are some restrictions, maybe a curfew from midnight or from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., and maybe restrictions on the sale of alcohol from Monday to Friday. I mean, that's not going to have as major an impact on the economy as it would when we are under level 4 or level 5, for instance.
Clement, we're going to go into what's called the builder's holidays, right? That's mid-December to early January, right? Naturally, industries, I think about 80% of the industries will shut down for that period. Why would you then affect the tourism industries, which rely on these peak periods to recover from this? Yeah. They're all looking forward to this. They're trying to make us comfortable to travel, interprovincially, because we're going to have a lot of local travelers as opposed to international travelers. Why would you drag them into this thing? Surely, if you know that all your major industries will be shutting down, there'll be less movement, people will go to their different provinces and stay there for at least 3 to 4 weeks. You've got that, you've got it under control, but people are not feeling that they're oppressed, as it were. Okay? But if you want to shut down the entire economy, surely because of 1 or 2 provinces that are having a spike in this, come on, it's unfair.
Yeah.
And also, you are not solving the problem. All you're doing, you're just putting band-aid on a bleeding wound.
Yeah.
You told us you wanted to build the infrastructure. But where is this infrastructure that you wanted to build? There's people also that are dismantled. Why did you do it in the first instance?
Yeah, and some were dismantled before they were even used. Dingan, I totally agree with you. You're raising some interesting points, man. This is the time for, even the alcohol industry, some of that industry to recover because of the impact that it's felt over the last couple of months. I just think there has to be some sort of balance. There has to be some sort of compromise. And I hear the argument around the economy. I hear the argument around protecting lives. We cannot afford another lockdown. But what does government do? Do they then, like as Dingani say, they had an opportunity to build the infrastructure, to prepare our health sector, then if that's prepared, if they were able to do that, then we don't have to consider restrictions. We just need to appeal to people to follow safety protocols, non-pharmaceutical protocols, and then life goes on. Do you agree with Dingani, or do you think there must be strict restrictions, even if they're localized and not being applied across the board, in order for us to avoid what could be a disastrous resurgence? It's 24 minutes after 9 o'clock.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
You know something else I want you to get your thoughts on? Government tried to get the public sector unions to postpone today's court hearing on the public sector wage bill until February next year. And this is to allow for negotiations and a possible out-of-court settlement. Remember, the public servants were promised salary increases as part of the three-year wage deal that was signed in 2018. But government unilaterally decided not to implement the increases, arguing that it doesn't have money. They said it's unaffordable. They were going to cost about 37 billion rand, right? And we were told that would push the budget deficit to 15.7% of GDP and take our debt to about 81.8% of GDP. So this last-minute attempt to negotiate an out-of-court settlement, possibly because government realizes it doesn't have a strong case, raises questions about the political will in government to commit to the cost-cutting measures and reforms that Treasury outlined, even in the medium-term budget policy statement. And the weird thing here is that government has for months insisted that the courts must settle the matter. Even when unions said, hey, let's talk, put an offer on the table. What do you think of this new development? Does government even have the money for a new offer? Or are they trying to trick the unions and they're trying to employ delay tactics? Because they still haven't put an offer on the table, but they're saying, no, postpone this court case today. Let's talk, postpone it until February next year, and maybe we can come up with an out-of-court settlement between now and February. Or are they simply trying to appease their union allies? What do you think of what's going on here? I would like to get your thoughts on 011-883-0702. Let's go to Rosettenville. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Clement. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Good, good. I want to talk about golf.
Sure.
Yeah, you know James Comte, if you remember him.
Yeah.
He's one of the successful black golfers around.
Mm, mm.
Unfortunately, he went down on his rankings. So he didn't play very well. But last week or so, he had an opportunity to play in the downhill.
Mm.
His caddy tested positive for COVID. So he was supposed to be withdrawn because of that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question I want to ask, how many black golfers play top golf in the country, in the Sunshine Tour?
Mm-hmm.
Why are the sponsors not sponsoring black golfers to play at that level? Because those opportunities are needed by everybody. It's not to say that we don't have good golfers in South Africa, especially black golfers.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot.
Yeah.
But there's nobody who's putting their money where their mouth is about inclusive golf. We want somebody to make sure that black golfers get an opportunity.
Mm.
Black children at an early age are given an opportunity to play golf and practice at any time they want to do that.
Mm.
Let the facilities be open for black people and black children everywhere.
Mm.
All the facilities, public facilities like golf courses, owned by municipalities, must be made accessible for black people to play golf.
Mm.
That's something that we are really taking, we're not giving a good attention to, because only a few people play golf.
Mm.
But
mm.
It disheartens me to see black people not being given an opportunity to play golf at the highest level.
Mm. Mm. And them really receiving similar sponsorships as well, Craig, as their white counterparts. When you talk about that accessibility, Craig, look, I go to the golf course possibly once or twice in 2 months, or once in a month or so. I try to go as often as I could. And one of the things I see, and I would often talk to my friends about this, is, you know, the number of black people that we continue to see on the golf course. I think we've seen that increasing over the years. And I get your point about, you know, the sponsorships and how they're not similar to their white counterparts. But do you think that accessibility is not there yet? Or are you talking about accessibility where the facilities are open and they're open for free for people who want to come? Because there are people who may be interested in the sport but don't necessarily have the money to use the facilities.
Yeah, we see that golf has been, there's this elitism attached to golf.
Mm.
that only poor black, I mean rich people can play golf, which is a mess. I must tell you that. You can play golf with second-hand golf clubs, and that doesn't cost a lot. Golf clubs are available everywhere. Second-hand golf clubs. You don't have to buy the latest and greatest Titleists.
Mm.
You don't have to play the best.
Yeah.
You can start with the cheapest clubs, and at the end you will, as long as you know how to swing the golf ball.
Mm.
The facilities must be created by the municipalities,
yeah,
so that there's black people have got an opportunity to play. It disheartens me to see only white people given an opportunity and to make those millions. It is not fair that black people cannot play golf at that highest level.
Mm. All right, Craig, thank you so much for raising that. Craig is calling us from Rosettenville. Do you agree with Craig there? What are your reflections when you look at the golf industry and the just the sponsorships and the accessibility for black people to also play at high level? What have you been able to observe? I'll take your reflections on 011-883-0702.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
24 minutes before 10 o'clock, it's the 702 open line. Give me a call and tell me what's on your mind this morning. 011-883-0702. Bashle, you're calling us from Silver Lakes. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you?
I'm okay, Bashle. You want to talk about the lotto numbers?
Parliament. Is there something in our green ID books that says, come start a scam here? We'll let you go.
Hi, Bashle.
No, is there something in our green box? Like, tell me. Maybe it's in my ID. I'm looking for it. Oh, it's like, do whatever. And then brush it off, and South Africans just sit and say, yeah, sharp, okay. Now, okay, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
and
10.
The bonus 10.
You're here now telling me, look, Naka, my small, very minute programming skills. If you go into a PC or a machine and you click randomize,
yeah,
there is, I was thinking, these guys can sit now and they want to tell us how to believe. And chances are South Africans, the way we are, we're going to let this thing slide.
Bashle, what do you think happened? I mean, Tara was reading the news now during the headlines that the Etuba National Lottery says there's nothing sinister about last night's lotto numbers.
Do you know they can say whatever they want to say because they know we're not going to follow it. We're going to forget. Like, it's scary, né? How they can sell us anything and South Africans will buy it. You can see it.
You know what I think, Bashle?
So, I want to hear this.
I think we're jealous. Because you are not 20 people that won more than 5.5 million rand by selecting that sequence.
I feel sorry for everyone that bought a ticket yesterday. I didn't buy one. I feel sorry because your money is going to absolutely... you're throwing it. You might as well just think of it like a toilet. What one?
Bashle, thank you for your call. Yeah. Yo, people are really, really, really... Okay, there's this voice note. Here, Abel, let's play this voice note. Where someone also comments about what Tara was reading there. Ituba saying that there's nothing sinister about this sequence.
Hi, Clement. So I was listening earlier to the lotto spokesperson. She says there is nothing untowards with the lotto numbers. I mean, she says the numbers are audited. Yo, can you imagine? If those numbers are audited by KPMG, then it leaves nothing to be desired, Shem. We know what happens,
Are they audited by KPMG? Huh? No. I mean, the spokesperson just indicated that there's nothing sinister about the numbers, and that Ituba says a computer system picks up the numbers which are fully audited and verified. Yeah, maybe let's check who audited. I don't know if it's KPMG. I don't think it is, but I could be wrong. So let me know who is responsible to audit the numbers. And yeah, look, guys, these things happen. Hey, and which system do you? Because there was that old system. Do you remember the old system, yeah, Lotto, where they used to, roll in and then the numbers come out, and then you were watching it live on television. And now there's a computer system. And I wonder what are the chances of that computer system being flawed as well? Which system do you prefer? I think let's be happy, guys. Let's be happy for these 20 people that won more than 5.5 million rand. Huh? Let's just be happy. Let's go to Randburg now. Hello, Helder. You want to talk about COVID-19? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Clement. Thank you. I'm just an avid reader. I've been following the biggest crisis in my lifetime very closely ever since it broke.
Mm.
And I've done a lot of reading, spent a lot of nights. If I tell you, it's months of nights that I've spent reading. And there's two things I've come to the conclusion. I mean, there's many, but two main things.
Mm.
Firstly, we have the biggest medical crisis in history, which is being led by politicians. This should be being led by a group of doctors only. We should be seeing doctors speak on TV, telling us a little bit more about what's going on. For example, most people that I ask, what is a PCR test? All they can tell you, it's a positive or a negative, whether you have it or you don't have it.
Mm.
In fact, a PCR test that's molding all policies and lockdowns is actually, people need to understand for themselves what that is. And we're using ultra-sensitive cycles, magnification cycles, to the point that anything above 30 magnification cycles, you have a 3% accuracy rate.
Mm.
So we're using, in South Africa, I know we're using 14 in some areas.
Mm.
The world is using between 37 and 47. Harvard, Oxford, those guys are saying we need to use those cheap tests, strip tests that will give you a better indication, and we could eradicate this within weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep pushing ultra-sensitive tests, and with these tests, we can go into any area and create a hotspot because it's just too sensitive. We are not seeing the deaths. We are seeing a massive rise in infections, and the more we test, the more infections we find.
Yeah.
So what we need to do, according to all the top universities, we need we need doctors, we need the medical fraternity to take over this pandemic. Because a lot of the stuff that government and politicians are doing makes no sense. And we're going to lose this battle. If we don't allow the medical world to take over this crisis, we are going to suffer unnecessarily.
What about the Medical Advisory Council, Helder?
Because they
are almost like the people representing the medical fraternity, and they've been advising government. Yes, government hasn't been taking some of their advice, but they've been at the forefront of helping government respond to this pandemic.
Well, you know what? I've got an article for one of the advisors on News 24 that was complaining.
Yeah.
That, like you said, they're not taking a lot of the advice.
Mm.
Now, what we need to understand is why aren't these people at the forefront? Why don't we have a channel of doctors, of these experts, speaking about it? Why do we have to work through and have a lot of things lost in translation through non-experts? I don't understand that, you know. I've got an article from News 24 of a complaint from one of the advisors saying that government is not implementing.
And there have been several of them. It wasn't just one. There are several of them that have complained.
But we as the public want to hear from the medical fraternity.
Mm.
We don't want filters, you know, because our lives and livelihoods are on the line.
Mm.
And a lot of these policies don't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, Helder, you raised an interesting point, man. Thank you for your call this morning. Let's make use of our top universities' research. Let's listen to the scientists. Let's allow them to be the ones that are leading at the forefront when you respond to this pandemic. I got a call earlier from someone who was talking about black golfers and that there is no sponsorship for most of them, you know, when you compare it to their white counterparts. And I see some of you are responding to that.
Hi, Clement. To your caller talking about black golfers needing sponsors, a sponsor can only sponsor you if you're good. They're not just going to sponsor any Charlie on the street. So if you're good, they'll sponsor you, black or white. If you're useless, they're not going to sponsor you. Tiger Woods was a black golfer, and he got hundreds of millions of dollars in sponsorship from Nike and the works. So no sponsor wants to sponsor someone who's not good. If you're good, sponsors will run, really. Sponsors are not looking at black or white. They're just looking to get value for money. That's the bottom line.
Pat, you're calling us from Benoni. What's your view on that? Hello, Pat.
It's that, yeah.
Yeah,
you
sure.
You know, I totally agree with this. Your previous caller, what he said. But listen here, I mean, for you to be good, you've got to start off somewhere. And, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, listen here, I've got a driving range in Benoni. I mean, we're not talking about the high-class driving range, the golf courses like Kibbutzi, Benoni Country Club, the highlight. I mean, you start off at a driving range. I approached the local, the HDSA, Historically Disadvantaged South Africans, the local schools in Atkinville, in Benoni Town, spoken to the principals, to the sports administrators, offering my premises free of charge during the school hours. You know what I mean? Rather than taking them to sports, some of these schools have not got premises for exercising. I told them, come during the day, I'll sponsor the balls, I'll sponsor the clubs free of charge.
Mm.
And there was only one school that took it, and that was one. I mean, I even approached the ward councillors on the East End, and there was no response. I mean, here we got an opportunity. We don't know. I mean, the man spoke about Tiger Woods. How many Tiger Woods are lying in the townships? How many Ernie Elsers are lying around here? And all they need is an opportunity. You know, the first time that these kids came, there was a mixture of blacks, Indians, coloreds. I tell you, you should have seen the excitement on their faces, Clement. Just grabbing the golf. Mind you, it's an expensive sport. I hire out these clubs for 10 rand. 10 rand. And I mean, for the schools, I was prepared to give it free of charge, a bucket of balls free of charge. Obviously, the time restraints from the school. But I mean, listen here, if I can get an opportunity to get in touch with somebody to try and offer this service, I'm willing to do. Hey, you know,
tell me, Pat, what do you want to
previously?
Yeah, what do you want to offer the services to the pupils, to young peoples in schools, to young peoples in communities? Originally, what was your idea? How did you wanna help?
Now listen here. I went to the schools. Yeah. I went to the obviously you can't teach from grade one. I mean, I said I'll start off with the grade seven, yes. Grade eight.
Yeah.
And in the high schools, obviously the matriculants, you know what I mean? They start off with the SRCs, some kind of incentive for them to come over here and come and listen. I can take about 15, 20 at a time. You know what I mean? I even got a coach here that we can try and even give them some lessons.
Pat, I think that's a great idea, man. Tell me, there are some 702 listeners that could be listening who say, we want to support Pat in his drive to unearth more Tiger Woods out there who are sitting in communities but don't have access to these facilities. How can they get in touch with you? How do they help you?
Listen, yeah, I can give you my number. I mean, it's the Benoni driving range. I mean, it's the Benoni driving range. But I said what I wanted to do is I wanted to start with the schools. I mean, there's so many kids here. I mean, these sports, previously it was, I mean, we were deprived of it. That's the honest truth. We weren't given an opportunity. Now we're given an opportunity. There's so many people that still come up to the driving range and they're surprised at the price of a bucket of balls. They're surprised that you can hire. You don't have to buy a set of clubs. I mean, I sell clubs, secondhand clubs. I mean, you're starting at a reasonable price. But I advise all the parents, listen here, if you're coming out here, before you'll invest in it, I mean, we understand there's a lot of people that haven't got that money. Hire out the clubs, and if the kids take a liking to it, come and try it out. See what it's like.
Give me your contact, Pat.
My contact detail is 082
416
9417. And it's the Benoni driving range.
Benoni driving range. Thank you so much for that call, Pat. I think the idea you have is quite incredible there. If you think you can support Pat in any way to make these facilities accessible, to get the kids out of communities, also just after school, this can be something they do. And who knows? Who knows? You can unearth some talent there. The number for Pat is 082-416-9417. 082-416-9417. Lebu, you're in Rabi Ridge. You want to respond to that? Good morning.
Yes, Clement. I think last week when I called to cry about the issue of facilities, this is what I was saying. But I think I'm more sober now. I can make more sense. What I'm saying is that we are sleeping on the job when it comes to sports in our country, big time. There's a huge opportunity. Look, I know everybody is trying to get academics up and everything, but can I tell you something? What I found in my 8 years of running my organization is that these kids in the township don't like school. And they actually made me think, I don't like school either. It didn't make sense because our brothers went to school and have degrees and they're sitting around. But once you gave a benefit for why they should go to school, beyond promising them a job later and everything, is that my players, once we started the sports program and I started to require reports and I started to get involved in homeworks, my car right now is a classroom. It's a library because we work in the municipality won't allow you to use their facility for education. The school doesn't allow this, doesn't allow that. So my thing is, if we had a coordinated effort, like the Americans do with the student athlete program, for example, where school and academics go together. The truth is, not everyone is a bright kid in school, especially because there's no motivation to. So the issue of facilities, the school, and people like us who are doing this for free, we are really, really... Michael Jordan is probably the greatest athlete of all time. How did we get to him? Because of an education basis that allowed him from school to college to being drafted.
Exactly.
Why can't we do that here?
I hear you, Lebo. I hear you. And we need that support. But also, you've got government sometimes that's just sitting and not prepared to come to the table, right? Someone says, Clement, it's not just golf. It's all sports at municipal clubs. You know, the rowing club at Emerentia Dam is exclusively white as well. This is an SMS, the WhatsApp text, in fact, on 0727021702. It's 9 minutes before 10 o'clock.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
Did you guys hear the news that Tara read sometime in the morning in one of her bulletins? There's this ultra, and this is really awkward, right? There's this ultra conservative politician in Hungary's anti-LGBTQI plus party who has resigned. Is this a politician who's resigned after he was caught by police at a gay sex orgy in Belgium? So he resigned on Sunday after he admitted to breaching Belgium's strict lockdown rules to attend the sex party. So the police found 25 naked men at the gathering, including him and some diplomats. This is someone who's part of the right-wing party. He's a right-wing politician, and he climbed out of a first-floor window and was spotted fleeing along the gutter. So he's been one of the most divisive figures, we're told, in Hungarian politics since 2010, when he helped even write the country's controversial constitution. And that constitution emphasized that marriage was to be between men and women, in what was interpreted as a pushback against campaigning for marriage equality. But then now, after being part of drafting that constitution, as a right-wing politician as he is, as someone who has made his views clear around the LGBTQI plus community, now he was found. He's resigned now because he was caught by police at a gay sex orgy. You know, people who say, who speak out publicly against certain things and then you find them privately doing other things. Have you noticed anything like that? Yeah, I saw the story and it just cracked me. It was so, so awkward. It's 7 minutes before 10 o'clock.
Walk the talk.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
4 minutes before 12 o'clock, MJ, you're calling from Pretoria. Good morning.
Hi, Clement, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
All right, man. Clement, look, my concern is whenever there's a leadership vacuum, there will always be problems in the country. And by leadership vacuum, I don't necessarily mean that there are no people sitting in the positions. There are people sitting there, but they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. If you look at the amount of lawlessness, everything that is falling apart in the country, it's because we have a problem where starting from our head of state. Our head of state is a capable man of leading this country. But our head of state is caught up in this initiative of trying to unite something that will never happen. Because the unity of ANC is just a fallacy now. And that is actually creating more problems from this country. Clement, there's a high level of despondency amongst us as citizens because of the leadership problem, that crisis that we have in this country. And if we do the right thing, if President Ramaphosa can just show leadership, for an example, believe you me, everybody, I think, will definitely know that they are supposed to do what they have been appointed to do. I mean, if you look at our sports facilities, the poor tiers, their performance, it's not necessarily to say those people are not capable, but there's a high level of despondency. The motivation is not there, Clement. Mm. If the very same sponsors that you guys are talking about when it comes to golf. I mean, if people who are supposed to concentrate on sport development in the black townships do what they're supposed to be doing, we won't even have to call sponsors to sponsor. They will come floating. If we do the right things, we won't even have to hold investment summit to try and lure people to come and invest in our country. Mm, the investors will come in their numbers. But if we keep doing this thing, corruption and stuff, I mean, President Ramaphosa will hold this investment summit. But those people are very seen that you are saying this, but the very same people that you are leading in your organization are doing the contrary.
Yeah, certainly. Show leadership, eh? And even if he shows leadership, I would argue he needs the support of the people around him. You know, you don't lead alone as the president in this country. And the people that you surround yourself with, are they people that are capable of giving you the support you need, even in the reforms that are needed? Jim, you also calling from Pretoria. You want to comment about this politician in Hungary who helped draft an anti-LGBTQI plus, you know, constitution, whose views are very clear, but then he was caught at a gay sex orgy.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
You just made my day, man. And, it's called karma. And by the way, my first time calling your show.
Welcome, Jim.
And it just reminded me of this article that I read of this racist white organization in America.
Mm.
And the president of that organization traced his roots back to Africa, sort of like black.
Mm.
And his own organization turned against him. So, life has got a way of coming back and biting your hand.
Yeah, hey. I mean, how awkward.
It's a very nice show you're having.
Thank you, Jim. How awkward is this? How awkward is this? Jim, thanks for your call. Who's Mr. Intention on Twitter says, Clement, my friend used to speak bad about gay people until I caught him watching gay porn when he was drunk. He begged me to keep it a secret. Until today, we're still besties.